Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
And joining us now, as we said earlier, we have two special guests, and they're part of the book called The Program, and it's Inside the Mind of Keith Rainier and the Rise and Fall of Nexium. So we have Tony Natalie and Chet Hardwin. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So now to begin with, Tony, first of all, how did you decide to write a book about your experience, and why did you do that?
Well, you know, as this process has unfolded over the last 20-odd years, I've had people, especially Chet, say to me, you know, someday I have to write a book. And when Chet would tell me that, I would say to him, well, we have to have an ending, because a good book always has to have a good ending. And when Keith was, when it looked like we finally had found the authorities that were going to actually do something, actually take a look into this criminal organization and stop what was going on and had been going on for decades, I started putting together the documents for the federal government to turn over to them. And what that did was gave Chet and I kind of like, I call it the bones or the basics, the guts of the book, because it was putting it together for an authority, for the authorities. So it was timelines, dozens and dozens of timelines, as Chuck can attest to, and then documents to support those timelines and different things that have had transpired over the last 20 years. So the book also was a healing. It was taking all of the things that happened and putting them down on paper and getting everything out. And hopefully it will help educate and show people that you can survive something like this with a good support system, and how to look for those flags, that coercive control that goes on. Because what people think today or thought was a cult, it's become very mainstream.
So now, Tony, you are considering yourself patient zero, is what you say. How is it that you and Keith got intertwined?
I met Keith in the early 90s when he was running a company called Consumers Byline. It was, again, a multi-level marketing company that saved people on goods and services. And, you know, the thing that I'd like people to keep in mind is when I met Keith, it was in the early 90s. We are very spoiled in the sense that we have computers in our hands today. So if someone asks us a question that we're not quite sure of, we do something called Google it. Well, back then there was no, right? True. Yes.
Yeah.
Back then there was no Googling. You looked into the eyes of the person that was speaking to you and you accepted the fact that why would they lie? And they were presented in a way that really, his calling card was, I have a 240 IQ. I'm the smartest man in the world and I'm going to change things. And I think innately we're all good. So if someone presents themselves in a way that can help us to better ourselves and show us a better way of doing things in the world, I think that we're open to that kind of a suggestion and that kind of a concept. And that's how I met Keith. It was, you know, that same thing of warm market, a friend introducing a friend. So the concept was consumers buy online, and that's how I originally got involved with them. But back in the 90s, there was no Rick Allen Ross Cult Institute to Google and see what was there, and help you to find your way in a coercive control or cult type group.
Okay, so now Tony, what was your first impression of him? Like, did you find him to be a warm person, a nice person? What was your impressions?
Well, you know, when somebody says you're about to meet the smartest man in the world or one of the smartest men in the world, I don't know, my expectations were a little different than what I saw. He was very unassuming, almost shy. Chet laughs at me because I pronounce it incorrectly, but he looked like little Lord Faulkner to me. He had little round glasses and bowl haircut, and he bounced when he walked. And he was shy and very, the way he presented himself at that point was, you know, the fair-haired boy from Troy was a story that they wrote about him in the Albany area. He was very much representing this young, idealistic man that was going to do things to change the world and save people money and make the world a better place. So what I expected was not what I saw, and that what I saw I thought was pretty remarkable, and I was interested in learning more about it, as were the 250,000 people that were and took place in Consumers Byline.
But you didn't feel threatened by him?
Oh, no, not at all. No, very unassuming, very sweet, very gentle, listened, kind, quiet. No, not threatened whatsoever.
So what was Consumer Bylines then?
Consumer Byline was a consumer-based organization that saved you hundreds or thousands of dollars on your goods and services, depending on how much you use the membership. It was a multi-level marketing concept, as everything Keith ever did was, because he is a frustrated Amway salesman, is really what's going on with him. He had started with Amway and, built himself to branding. I don't know. So it was a consumer-based organization and a multi-level marketing company.
Wow. So how did it turn into Nexium? Like, what was the first thing you noticed that was a change?
Well, Consumers Byline was shut down by 22 attorney generals and two federal agencies back in the early 90s. And from that point, Keith and I opened up a company called National Health Network. It was a supplement organization, again, with a multi-level aspect to it, because everything Keith does has an MLM arm to it. But the concept behind that was saving people money on their supplements and their food and connecting traditional doctors with alternative doctors. And it was a great concept. It just wasn't going to give Keith the platform. He wasn't going to be idealized as he was with Consumers Byline. I mean, our meetings were anywhere from 500 to 5,000 people in a room, mostly men, not there for self-help improvement, but for there to build a business. And then National Health Network was a lot of people interested in health. So Keith wasn't the big draw there. The big draw was the savings. And when he met Nancy Selsman, who's also one of his co-defendants, that's where the transition came in. Nancy Salzman claimed to be the number two NLP, neuro-linguistic programmer, in the world. And she had an ability and a background on brief therapy hypnosis, so was capable and pretty proficient at people that are susceptible to hypnotic suggestion, putting them into a certain, as she calls it, state. And when Keith saw Nancy present what she had been doing for years with some pretty major corporations, he saw his next best move, because that was going to get him where he wanted to be and what he really felt he was, the vanguard. So she gave him that permission.
So what went on in the meetings? Anything special? Or
when
you guys had your group meetings together, like what were they consist of?
Well, I went through the initial, what I call the pilot program for Executive Success Program. So originally the first name for NXIVM was ESP, Executive Success Program. And I think that in 2003, when the Forbes article came out and kind of pulled back a piece of the curtain, they realized they needed to do something so that the media couldn't catch up. So that, coupled with, as I explained in the book, what is believed to be the concept of the name changed. So it was a little bit more difficult for people to follow. But what I experienced in the breakout groups that I went through in that pilot program were the sessions, as Nancy called them, that I was having with Nancy for over a year to help me with my deep-rooted problem, which was the fact that I was molested as a child. So that molestation was the root of all of my problems, and she was going to help me through them. And I saw bits and pieces of our, what I, as much as I could recall in our sessions, kind of popping out. I call it like a shutter shot. You know, when you take a picture of a camera and you see that click. And to me, it was disturbing that it was therapy. And there were people sharing what I consider now to be early collateral by sharing their secrets with people that, A, didn't have any kind of educational background or authority to do this type of therapy, and that it would be used later for them, against them, as a way to convince them maybe to help out with things, or you really don't want that shared. It was how he started originally, and as I have seen how he gets into that crack and then escalates. So it started off with just kind of sharing basic things, and it moved all the way into naked photos and other things, as we saw with DOS.
So now maybe explain what DOS was.
DOS was a claimed to be, but DOS was a female, what they presented it as, like a female sorority. So it was presented to some of the girls as a boot camp for women, or a sorority for women. And it was supposed to be just for women, about women. And what it turned out to be was Keith's way of kind of living out all of his fantasies.
So how did you and Chet get together?
Chet, you want to answer that one?
Sure. I had just started a new job in Albany, New York. I was the news editor of the Alternative News Weekly there. And I think I was my first month there. And I got a cold call from a former consultant with NXIVM who wanted to hand over some documentation and that he felt was would make NXIVM look bad, and also wanted to connect me with Tony so that she could tell her story. So I went and I met with this former consultant, and the document proved to be very valuable, and started talking to Tony, and within 2 months we had a story out. It was the first real sort of local expose into Nexium and Keith. And Tony and I just kept in touch after that. I did some stories after that. I believe I was the first person to report about Allison Mack being a member of Nexium. And, yeah, we just stayed in touch and, watched as all of this transpired over the past 13 years.
So now Tony, I was going to say, so how long were you involved with, Rainier?
I met Keith in 91 and I left in 99. And the last thing he said to me before, the last words out of his mouth that I heard him say was, the next time I see you, you will be dead or in jail.
Wow.
And and I'm here to tell you, he tried very hard to make one or both of those things come true. He was half right, because as we'd learned from the Eastern District of New York, he really isn't that smart, because in their, in the indictment that they presented, they showed that he was barely passing his grades. So he was only half right. The next time I saw him, he was in jail. And much to his shock, as he came through the door, he saw me and I saw him, and it's like, bye.
So what was it that led you to leave? What were the first cracks that you saw in what he was up to?
Well, I had met Keith and started a relationship with him and moved to Albany. And when I was uncomfortable with what was going on, I tried to break it off. And this was early on in our relationship. And he came, you don't leave Keith. He came back pretty hard at, I'll give you all of the things you and your son need. I understand what you want. And for a short amount of time, for several years, he did try to provide that stability that we needed. And then when he met Nancy, we were starting to have problems before he met Nancy Salzman. Things were starting to unravel a bit. I was working a lot of hours, and my parents had moved to the area because my mom, my greatest advocate, my greatest support, was not happy about what was going on and decided she and my dad will return. Why not come and get closer to me? And when Nancy came along, they started to formulate what is now known as Nexium. And part of me was kind of relieved, and I thought, okay, well, he'll go off and do that, I'll just continue to run the company that I'm doing, raise my child, and we'll see where it goes from there. But what happened with ESP and with his ability to have his next best, Keith just constantly replaces the people in his life to take everything that they bring to the table out, draw it out, use it, and then push them aside. And when he met Nancy and was able to create this platform of executive success program, he no longer really wanted to play that role of boyfriend and co-parenting partner. And when he wanted me to call him Vanguard, and the idolizing was becoming so prevalent, people were bowing to him, and there was a shift that wasn't something that I was willing to stay or participate in. That's when things started to get violent in our relationship and go in a direction that wasn't safe for my child or something that I wanted to be involved in. So I tried to leave, thinking, actually my brother came in to try to help me to leave, but the ask was much too big. So we laughed. I sent my son, went back to live with his father, who I thank God for, because he is the one that raised him and took care of him when I was not capable of doing so. And kind of put my head down, thinking that eventually it will go away. And it just never did. I mean, when Keith was arrested in March of 2017, he was still suing me in the state of Washington and trying to have me and several other people extradited to Mexico on false charges. I call it terrorism by litigation. I mean, his relentless pursuit of his enemies or anyone he feels is a detractor or a suppressive, as I've been so well labeled. He will, when you have endless amounts of money behind you. So the thing that's funded Nexium all these years is the fortune of the Brofman sisters. And, you know, I'm sure that Mike is well aware of who they are, mm-hmm. Given you're up in Kadena. And, you know, when you don't care what the outcome of a lawsuit is, you just continue to sue. And if you're on the receiving end of that, you have to fight back. So you're constantly defending yourself over frivolous things that in the end doesn't really matter to them if it's a quote unquote win or lose in their box. It's did they destroy you? Did they break you physically, financially, emotionally? And anyone that's been in a long-term litigation understands what that's like.
Did Keith actually feel threatened by you? Like when you guys parted ways, did he feel like you were going to attack him?
No, I think with Keith that if he can't own you, he has to destroy you. So what I represented for him was that he was infallible. No one had ever left Keith. The women that were with him then are some of the same women that were with him when he was arrested. Two of them had passed away. A few of them had left earlier years earlier. But the core group that helped enable him to do what he's done, he's lazy. So what Keith is more than anything is lazy. And what he does is he puts like a lot of cult leaders, they find producers, people that are hard workers, people that can, that will do the work that they won't do. And without those enablers, he would have never been able to succeed where he did. They through the trial, they very brilliantly laid out how this core group of women were well aware of, let me digress. He presented himself as a renunciate, a celibate monk, a renunciate. So now you have this illusion of a man with a 240 IQ who's a celibate monk, who's a renunciate, who has no need for material things, wants. And the women that were helping to perpetuate this lie all knew about each other and were all sleeping with him. So they helped to insulate him and help him to be able to further that perceived notion of, this guru type of an individual with all of the accolades and all of the brilliance that you would want in someone to teach you a better way to do things.
So he must have had quite a charisma, quite a style, like Charlie Manson or something, that people were drawn to him.
Very much so. I mean, you know, I've had a lot of attorneys that I've met with over the years, because I'm sadly not the only person that Keith has sued, and they say, you know, what is it? You know, like, what is it about him? And the thing is, he listens. He listens and listens and listens, and he waits until he hears your strength, and he waits until he hears your weaknesses, and he uses both of them against you. And you have no idea it's happening because he was so unassuming. There was a gentleness almost to him where I know inside.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now that was just, you know, it was just a facade. But it wasn't something that, it's a slow, slow drip. It's a very slow drip the way he does this, because people say, well, how does someone let themselves be branded? Well, it just doesn't happen that way. Those girls were, some of them, in NXIVM for quite a long time. And then they were already indoctrinated, already predisposed to, you know, some sort of collateral if they did not do what they should have done. And calling him Vanguard and submitting to the will of the prefect and the Vanguard. So if you were already predisposed to certain things, he just kind of handpicked and kept drawing people along. And in some cases, it wasn't him that kept them there. It was the person that brought them in that kept them there. So it went down, it reached down into levels, or generations.
So now explain that branding or tattoo that you guys had on your bodies.
So I never had a brand or a tattoo.
Okay.
That was something that was done much later with a very selective group of young women. And that was after years of Keith indoctrinating them into, as I said, they would start with, there was NXIVM or ESP. And then from that, there was another organization called Jeunesse, which was a women's group created by a man, but for women. So it's kind of like the distilling down, and you keep distilling down until you get the people that, okay, I've pushed them this far. Let me see just how much further I can push them. It's the escalating of a psychopath. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did. So the branding, to the best of my knowledge, did not occur until, I believe it was 2015. In a good or a bad way, that was the tipping point. You can't brand your initials on people's bodies. It was enough, sadly, all the things that were done to people for decades before that was not enough to bring the authorities in. Not for lack of trying, because we tried. But this was the thing that finally pushed it over the edge where, okay, we really need to take a look at this organization. And I guess, thank God, because I think that if he got women to go to that extreme, the next extreme would have been, you know, someone's death, although there's death involved in this, but a deliberate something else that he would get someone to do.
What do you think the scariest thing that you ever saw him do was?
Scariest thing?
Like, to any of the members, any of the people involved in the group, did he kind of beat people or attack people or anything like that?
No, I never saw, you know, rape as a physical thing, so let's not slight that. But, Keith, it's a mental abuse, and it's control. So it's taking someone and breaking them down until he breaks people down, and then he rebuilds them into what he wants. So what's the worst thing I ever saw him do? Destroy my childhood. I mean, for me personally, attack my parents. Be relentless with my brother to the point where, he passed away in 2009. The cause of death was suicide. Do I think my brother decided today I'm going to swallow a bottle of pills and die? No, but I think that he was pushed to the point where he just couldn't get Keith to leave us alone. And he was tired. And I think he over-medicated. So the worst thing I ever saw him do was just not leave us alone. I mean, we wouldn't be having this discussion if he had left me alone. I'd be watching from the sidelines and going, wow, I dated that guy. I dodged a bullet. But his relentless pursuit was I don't know. People say to me, how did you do this? And I would say, I didn't have a choice. Because what were my options?
What do you think he wanted to do to you? Like, what was his end game for you? Did he actually want you dead, or...
I think if that could have happened without it pointing a finger at him, yeah, probably. He, control. I mean, Keith, a psychopath, it's about control and power. So what he wanted to do was control me. And because he could not control me, he wanted to destroy me. Mm-hmm. And it's me or anyone else that has ever left him that actually spoke out or stood up. There was a box of documents at the courthouse with dossiers on the enemies list. Chet was on the enemies list. You know, reporters or the attorneys that even some of their own attorneys, Edgar Brofman Sr. I mean, he causes a sense of paranoia within the organization so that there's always a bad guy. And I think narcissists, people that are part of a coercive control mindset, it's what they do. There has to be a bad guy. So he creates the illusion of perceived enemies so that instead of people watching him do what he's doing, they're watching this other person. Sleight of hands.
So, Chet, what was your relationship with Keith, being that you were on the hot list, did you guys have any interactions?
Yeah, I met with Keith once. I also met with Nancy Saltzman, the president of NXIVM. I met with Keith at a volleyball game. NXIVM was suing the newspaper I worked for. They were, in New York State, you file an intent to sue, and we were served with this intent to sue, and they were going to sue, they said, for $65 million for something that I had written a year earlier. So I met with Keith at a volleyball game. It was him and I think Claire Bronfman was there, Allison Mack was there, and quite a few others, no one whose names you would recognize. And it was at midnight, and we played until about, you know, 4, and Keith and I spoke for a while. It was, you know, it was about as odd as you would expect it to be when you're meeting a cult leader for a midnight game of volleyball.
Right.
Right.
I would say. But was he real assertive with you or aggressive?
No, he's not. And that goes back to what Tony was saying. Keith is so unassuming, and he's so just, you know, if you walked into a room full of people, Keith would not be the one that sticks out to you. you know. I mean, you know, bringing up Charles Manson, you walk into a room full of people, Charles Manson's going to stand out, right? Even before he, before that. Yeah. Keith didn't. Keith wouldn't. Keith looks like, you know, he could be, he looks like he could be anything, you know, like a college professor or you know, a salesman. I mean, he does not strike you as a cult leader. And at that volleyball game, he didn't intimidate me. He didn't threaten me. He just tried to win me over. It was this constant attempt to get me to be on his side, to align myself with him or to accept, you know, to accept an offer from him. I was reporting at the time they were trying to bring the Dalai Lama. They had arranged to bring the Dalai Lama to Albany for a NXIVM event. It was a company under NXIVM, under the NXIVM umbrella, essentially. And I had been reporting about that because the daily paper hadn't. They weren't happy about that. That's why they filed that intent to sue. So
you think the lawsuit was more about control and getting control over you and the paper?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The deal that Keith floated was, you know, I stop writing about NXIVM, and Keith gives me, Keith doesn't file the suit, and he gives me an exclusive one-on-one interview. That was the deal I was supposed to mull over.
Well, there you have it. What was the most shocking thing for you to learn when you were doing the book?
For me personally, the most shocking thing during the trial, you know, Tony and I were at that trial from day one to the very end, and Tony before day one, she was at the pretrial hearings, There were so many moments that were traumatizing for everybody who had to listen to it, and traumatizing for the people who were reliving it. And the most shocking, it's hard to like pick one of these things out and say this was more shocking than another, but I think it's how much time Keith spent controlling the women around him. Like, I'd never really put that together. They went through all the text messages that Keith would send to his, to the 16-year-old girl he was grooming and raping, the text messages he would send to all the women and the emails he would send out. This was a full-time job for him, just keeping his control over the women in his inner circle. He texted as much as you would expect like a teenager to text. It was kind of embarrassing at some points listening to these texts. But that was the most shocking to me. It was just the amount of energy he exerted controlling all of these women around him.
So now he eventually got arrested, and what ended up happening in court for him?
Well, he was.
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was convicted on every count. He's going to be sentenced in January. Tony's going to be delivering a victim impact statement at that. All of his co-conspirators pled guilty, they didn't even go to trial. And yeah, Keith went through 7 weeks of trial. It was all laid out, and he was convicted on all seven counts. But then, I think, Tony, the jury took like 4.5 hours to deliberate.
And they had lunch.
Well, that's important, you know.
Right, their last government meal, they had lunch, yes.
Yeah, well, you got to have, you know, you got to convict on a full stomach.
That jury was amazing. They were really amazing. What they had to sit through was unbelievable, and they were attentive and on point and professional. I take my hat off to them. They were quite amazing.
Seems like, I guess, most of his convictions were related to trafficking and sex trafficking and forced labor, right?
It was racketeering conspiracy, forced labor conspiracy, wire fraud conspiracy, sex trafficking of one of the victims, and attempted sex trafficking of another one of the victims.
Wow. Have you heard from him since the trial or conviction, or is he trying to sue either one of you again? Or
I think he's busy.
Well, you never know.
No, you really never know with Keith. The nonverbal communication that went on during the trial between Keith and I became almost a bit of a banter. It was kind of fun. NLP has certain modalities that you use, and he would try to do some of those things, and then he just got frustrated, and as his glasses would slide down the front of his face, he'd use his middle finger and push his glasses up and glare at me. So I'd use my middle finger and I'd brush my bangs back. And this was, it was almost comical because it got to the point where almost jurors were kind of leaning, looking over to see, like, who is he glaring at? Be like, hey. So no, he hasn't, you know, he hasn't sent me any letters from prison. I'm open to it though. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd love to hear from him.
Yeah, I would think, you know, he's got a lot of time if he's in prison.
Maybe he's taking up knitting.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know. It could be his next profession.
He's starting an in jail cult. Well, sadly, from what I understand, he's been caught with two cell phones. So, you know, the not so funny part of this is the fact that he still feels so entitled, mm-hmm. and who the hell is he calling? And the Brockmans still have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Right. And a sociopath is never going to change.
No, never, never. Small playbook, different players. It's just the same thing. So I do wait. You know, I'm still very careful and cautious with my actions and where I go and what I do, because as you say, you never know. There's more of a chance that he will than he won't. So, but at least at this point, the world is aware of who he is and what he is. Whereas before all of this, for a long time, I was the only one yelling, hey, there's a crazy man in the room, and why can't anyone see that? And then people started to kind of come on and get involved and repeat the same thing and see the same patterns. But even in bringing things to the attorney general's documents and proof of what was going on and being told, you know, we'll get back to you. Stop sending things. We'll get back to you.
So do you feel like he still has people out there who are fans of his, like Manson had Squeaky Fromm and people like that who stayed with, quote unquote, the family for years afterward and still worshipped Charlie? Do you think there's people out there like that for Keith?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do. I saw them in court. So he did have people that are in court, that were in court or tried to get into court every day. And yeah.
Did they shave their head? And
you know, here's the thing. The one thing that an organization, a self-help organization like this does, for the most part, it draws good people, because I don't think anyone wants to join a cult. They go into this wanting to learn a better way and a better modality of doing things. And they look, the reason for the program, the reason for writing the book is in part to show people the signals, the red flags, the things to look for, because no, they don't shave their head. They look like the girl or the boy next door or your office mate. And this type of coercive control indoctrination doesn't happen to just a select few. It could happen to anyone. And, you know, Chet and I have talked about this. Had he not been prepared for what he went into, I mean, these are beautiful people that look like they're having fun and a smart guy. And the trappings are all there, which is what, you know, what a cult is, to draw people in. And it's how far you're willing to go. What's your moral compass? That's the difference between those that went through and said, well, I didn't have too bad of an experience. You know, I didn't see it like that. And those that got to the point where they were branded.
Mm-hmm. Why did it take so long for people to jump on the Nexium cult bandwagon, so to speak? Like, it seemed to take a while.
For the authorities?
For the authorities, yeah.
I think it's political connections and money.
Yeah.
I mean, the charges that were lodged against me and several other people that were absolutely blatantly false were absurd. And the attorneys that worked with the people that were being charged with either the criminal side of this or the civil side of this, journalists from Vanity Fair, from New York, from the Albany Times Union, myself and other people, to them it was so absurd. Like, this is ridiculous. These are ridiculous charges. And the civil charges were proven to be false because of Claire Brofman's perjury, yet nothing was done. So what we understand in the world of law is that if you perjure yourself, there's consequences. Not if you're Claire Brofman. Not if you have that kind of money. So I think the influence and the power, and Albany is a cesspool. You know, it's just full of corruption.
Wow. So now, what do you hope people get out of the book when they read it?
I hope that they get an understanding that, you know, you can survive things you don't really think that you can. You can come out the other end of this standing, and what to look for, and how. What I tell people is, at the end of the day, I don't want to be that person that doesn't trust the next person that comes to me, because then he wins. So how are you able to protect yourself in a way where you know what to look for? What are the flags? What are the signs? And how do you help other family members that may be in a cult or a coercive control relationship to get out without scaring them away and letting them know that they do have a place to go, that there is a safe spot? You just always have to keep your mind and your heart open for them.
So now the book is available everywhere, and we'll have that on our website as well. Now, do you have a website or a place that people can contact you, or do you stay hidden?
No, no. Chet and I are right out there, aren't we, Chet? we have a website called The Fall of Nexium, and we have a spot on the website where people can contact us, where they can share their experiences either publicly or privately, in a safe space, because there's a lot of trolls on the internet, and there's a lot of ways that people bash people that have gone through something like this, and it's hurtful enough to realize you've been duped, or what you've believed in all those years didn't turn out to be true. And, oh my God, how did I get here? And how many people did I bring into it? Then to go someplace and not have someone that can try on that experience and help you through that, and help you understand the process of deprogramming, or places that you can go and help that you can get. And in 2020, Chet and I will be doing a podcast called The Fall of Nexium.
Well, fantastic. I still can't believe people would actually say or be mean to others online.
Right.
It's never happened to me.
It never happens.
Never.
Nothing but love. Well, it's been a real pleasure, and we're glad you took the time to talk about your book and about your upcoming podcast and website and everything. And again, thank you, Tony, and thank you, Chet.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your time very much.
Thanks so much.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll say it.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.